In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
Pow. On. Hello. Now I sound like my drum kitchen. welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast that stays together entirely for the children.
Yeah.
That's you guys. William and I don't even want to hang out anymore, but we do it so that you guys won't be upset and think we don't love you anymore.
And it's not your fault that so we don't.
We're in a cold, loveless hosting gig just to so that you guys can have a nice, normal family meal.
Basically. Yeah. So don't blame yourselves.
No, no. This podcast ended a long time ago. Yeah. We've just been going through the motions. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 71.
And Ezzy's over here. I don't know what she's going to do tonight. She's been in a weird mood the last few days.
I just find it odd that I come in here, she's nowhere to be found. I sit down and then she shows up. It's like she knows what's happening.
Well, she can teleport also.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, she can teleport. It's really kind of freaky. Hmm. Most of our cats have some kind of superpower. Hers is actual teleportation. It's bad.
She doesn't really make any noise when she does it.
No.
In the movies, they always make a noise.
Pop or fizzle or something. No. She can just do it. But yeah, no, she's been very weird. I think she misses Trish, is what I think.
Oh, yeah. She's been gone.
But also, she hasn't eaten in the last couple of days. She gets in these moods once every week or two where she just won't eat for a few days. Or I should say, won't eat her food. Then she tries to eat my food, but.
Oh, I see.
And that's the only time she does that, because she's not a food-motivated cat normally.
But. Well, I hope she's all right.
Yeah, she's a pain in the butt. Anyway, yes, episode 71, the first of two-part episode. We're going to leave you on a cliffhanger. No, we're not really. But I'm going to be gone. I'm leaving tomorrow on a jet plane, fairly confident about when I'll be back again. But in between, we're going to miss an episode.
You know what? That's a good idea. We could leave him on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
We could read a question and not answer it. Of course, for us, we'll be answering it right away.
Like immediately.
But they'll have to wait a whole week.
I like that.
That's a good idea.
I'm surprised that you like that. It's kind of evil.
That was a good idea, a cliffhanger. Why didn't I think of that?
You did, actually.
No, I thought of what the cliffhanger would be like, but you thought of actually having
a
cliffhanger.
No, that was just a joke, though. No, I'm giving you credit for that one, for when they come and get us with their pitchfork. Speaking of which, did the phrase hotter than a pitchfork sale in Frankenstein Town go beyond our podcast, or have other people started listening to our podcast again that didn't use
you to? You saw a certain person say it. Who's heard me say it?
So you did not coin that phrase last week.
not on the podcast. No.
Okay.
I actually both of the phrases I used I'd made up earlier in.
Okay.
In fact, I knew when I said the first one, and I said it's what people say. You would say people don't really say that.
No.
So I knew that would be my opening to say the other one.
Mm.
I was gonna try to make up a third one, but I just couldn't. So.
All right, then.
No, it's...
Because I saw that. Somebody else said that spontaneously.
Well, if I would... If you asked me about it, I was going to pretend that, I've heard that all over the place, but no. I'm not that good at lying, so... No, well, I just made it up to be silly.
By the way, this week I'm sober. I am drinking something that has ice in it, but I won't touch it a lot, so
you can deal.
Somebody, in fact, did complain in really cryptic, weird ways on Twitter, but I finally was like, what are you talking about? And they explained that apparently the audio for them something, me messing with the glass and the ice, like, was really bad.
Oh, wow.
So I apologize to anyone who had that problem. I'm not doing that now. So you may occasionally hear this sound, which is the ice in the plastic Wendy's cup that I'm drinking my Diet Coke out of, but that's it. So, for those of you brand new to the show, because we're always getting so many listeners.
People just filing in.
William and I found a magic hat. It is magic in the sense that it has its own email. And when you email the hat, your topics and questions and comments and things come out of the hat in little cards. And we draw them out at random and read them and talk about them till we're bored. And that's the whole show.
That's it?
Yeah.
Except we sometimes talk about our...
Yeah, we also talk about other shit if we feel like it. We just talk about stuff. The hat is almost inconsequential. One might almost say a really weak premise. But, you know, it's magic and it rules our lives, so we deal.
Yep.
So, William Ferd, how was your week?
William Ferd. It was...
I've noticed this thing lately where I start making up nicknames by just adding other syllables on the end.
Sure, sure.
Williamshire.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Williamington. Things like that.
Wilberg.
Yes. I have a friend named Jim. I've started calling him Jimothy. I'm fond of that one.
Yeah, why not?
Yes. So...
It was productive from a work standpoint, but nothing really to talk about. I'm kind of excited, though, about tomorrow because... the third installment of Christopher Nolan's Batman.
Oh, are you going right on the day?
I think I'll probably go tomorrow, and then we'll probably watch, we'll double feature it with Spider-Man, so Batman, Spider-Man.
Oh.
Batman, Spider-Man double feature.
Batman, Spider-Man. Nice. Nice.
Because they are both in the theater at the same time, so why not?
Dark Knight, come over to house. It's going to be the fourth Nolan Batman.
Batman, Spider-Man.
Gonna go on this journey. I'm gonna be I'm gonna be less curious what you think of Dark Knight Rises because I think it's gonna be awesome and I'm gonna see it. So the fuck cares what you think? But I am gonna be curious what you think of Amazing Spider-Man because I have not seen it and I'm not sure I'm gonna bother.
Really?
I haven't heard it's bad. Well, I just haven't heard it's that good either, and I don't know that I care.
I was not really interested one way or the other in seeing it.
Speak up, towards the mic.
As it turns out, the other adult in my house is quite a fan of Spider-Man.
Really?
She used to
not know that. I always thought you were kind of a fan as well, I had thought.
Well, sort of, but I mean, she, you know, Spider-Man was in the Sunday comics for years and years and years.
Yes, and, fighting hippies.
And she read it every week. I read it sometimes. But yeah, I'd say out of Marvel's cast of characters, Spider-Man was really not just the only character I really knew anything about, but the only character I really cared anything about.
Yeah. But you're primarily a DC guy.
Yeah. So yeah, when the new film came out, I was somewhat interested. I didn't know if I'd bother to see it either, but we're going to go see Batman, and while we're there...
And it's a cool double feature.
Yeah, we might as well see Spider-Man. And if... Here's the thing. There's a certain review site that I find that I trust, and I understand the rating system pretty well.
Is it? Share it with us.
Screen It.
Huh.
I first started using Screen It because it's a parental review site is what it is, first and foremost, and I would use it because we would be taking kids to films and we'd want to know what was in it. But the guy who started it also wrote reviews. Now, he has other people writing reviews now besides just himself, but back when he was writing them, I loved him. I mean, I thought this guy... I mean, I didn't always agree with him, but you know, when you find a good reviewer, it's not the point that you always agree with them. It's the point that you always feel like after you read the review, you know what to expect.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if he hated the film, but you feel like you understand his review well enough that you would actually love it. You see what I'm saying?
That you get a sense of how you would react to the film based on their review.
Right, exactly.
Not necessarily that you react the same
way.
But that you know what the... the function is, where you plug in their review and come up with what you would.
And he had this 10-point system for rating them, which I also found, I felt I figured out very quickly. Like, well, for example, the Amazing Spider-Man.
I'm guessing, I mean, I haven't ever seen this, but I'm guessing 10 is the best.
Yeah, 10 is the best.
And then 1 is the bottom. I figured it out without even having read any of this.
But what I mean by that is you get the impression that there are certain movies that will never get a 10.
Okay.
So that if it's rated a 6, for example, oh, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good
for that kind of movie.
For Jury Duty 2.
Or whatever, right. So, like, The Amazing Spider-Man got a 7. I can't imagine this guy ever giving a superhero movie anything like an 8 or a 9 or a 10. Because he's only gonna rate artistic, really good artistic movies probably as a 10.
Okay.
A popular film is already gonna have some strikes against it.
So he's a critic's critic.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. But that's okay because it's a 10-point system. You know, so there's a lot of
yeah.
Whatever.
You've still got room for a really good superhero movie versus a really shitty superhero movie.
Actually, comic book movies in a more general sense are probably never going to get. I mean, if you see a 6 on just a general comic book movie, but you like comic book movies, well, then you probably like the movie. And also, when you read his reviews, they're so, you know exactly why he rated it the way he rated it. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
There's nothing vague about it. He tells you everything he liked about it, everything he didn't like about it. Now, again, he's hired some other reviewers that, aren't as good.
Well, and aren't going to come from his same position.
Right. But in general, even today, sometimes, like with Spider-Man, if it'd been rated lower than a 5 or something, I wouldn't have bothered. Mm. But the fact that it was rated, I think it was rated a 7, I thought, okay, well, this is probably a decent movie because I didn't see if he was the one who rated it. I know if he rated it a 7, that it was probably
And
good.
This site is screenit.com?
Yeah, screenit. Mm-hmm.
For my reviews, I mean, I go to the aggregate sites because I'm curious, but usually I check AV Club. Now, AV Club and I don't always get along, but I feel like they back up their reviews pretty well. And so, oftentimes, when they talk about why they did or did not like, it gives me pretty good insight as to what I would think. But I'm starting to ease off of reviews and even trailers. I feel like they're all too spoilery these days.
Oh, well.
So often nowadays I read reviews of movies after I saw the movie.
And that's part of the reason I don't read the review. I just look at the rating. I don't even check to see if he wrote it because the reviews not all the reviews are signed, you know. I have to kind of read it to know, okay, this is this guy because I can tell what he's like. But I don't want to read it, you know. I just want to go to the movie. So I'll just look at the rating, and I guess I trust that even though I've read reviews from some of the people he's hired and I haven't been impressed with the review, I just trust that, you know, he's really proud of his site and he's at least going to want the reviewer, if they don't write a review as well as he writes it, at least their rating is reflective of, you know, how he usually rates.
Yeah.
And so far it's been okay. You know, I'll just look at a rating and I'll go, okay, that's fine, and it usually works out, But like, you know, if he's got a rating on it that's really low and I've expected something different, I'll read it to find out, you know, what his particular problem with it was. And if I don't have the same kind of problem that he has, and that, again, that's what I like about it. If you read like Gene Siskel or something, or Roger Ebert, you know, sometimes you don't really get a good sense of what was the problem? You know, you didn't give it the highest rating, so what was it you specifically didn't like about it? Well, this reviewer on ScreenIt, he'll always tell you exactly what his problem was, and you can go, okay, well, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Ebert is historically incredibly inconsistent.
Well, that's true. You really can't predict
the amount of films that he will rip apart versus films that he says, well, yeah, it was dumb, but it was just fun.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I appreciate both of those positions. You can't have it both ways. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, this guy's very consistent, and you really understand what he's about. So, again, it's very much a matter of being able to understand, okay, well, if he thinks this about a film, well, I know I'm going to think this about him. But the thing about going to aggregate sites, though, is I found that does a good job of telling you how the culture in general is responding to a film, but I don't think it often, which of course for me doesn't give me any sense of how I'm going to.
There's too many. Mostly what it does, what I've discovered, well, besides piss me off if I go to an aggregate site and then go see a movie and have a vastly different opinion, mostly what it does is a movie on an aggregate site that does really, really well may still suck.
Yeah, right.
A movie on an aggregate site that does really, really poorly tends to really suck.
Well, that's probably true.
And the phone is ringing.
That's probably really loud for the listening audience.
Hello?
Ezzy doesn't like it.
No, thank you. You guys have been calling for a while now, and I finally decided to answer because you're all here.
How polite.
It's a research for... I'm guessing they were going to ask me questions about who I was going to vote for. And Ezzy wants to answer the phone. Ezzy had a weird reaction to the phone earlier, too. I don't know. She's a little bit freaked out by the phone. But yeah, no, if I go to Metacritic and something scored a 30... odds are it's really atrocious. And so sometimes it helps me where I'm like, this, I haven't heard a lot about this, but it looks interesting. And I go there and it's like 26. Like, never mind.
Yeah, well.
And I mean, it could have saved me from things like The Last Airbender.
That's true.
Had I paid attention.
Actually, this site that I've been talking about, if just about any film of any genre of any kind, if it scores a 5 or lower, it's
probably not
very good. Yeah.
But no, Metacritic frequently has stuff that rates really high that I am not happy with. But.
So, yeah, that's tomorrow. We'll be doing that, hopefully. Everything
cool.
Will work
well, you'll
out
have
so
to report in 2 weeks. Of course, by then, everybody will have seen them.
Yeah, it won't even matter.
Yeah.
You'll even have seen it by then.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Don't think so.
Well, I'm going to be on vacation. We probably won't see them on vacation.
Yeah, I suppose.
There will technically have been one date night, so I might have seen it the night before. But I don't know. We'll see.
What about you? How was your week?
My week was good. Bachelor week. Did good. Had a session of Dresden Files that went very well. I feel like we're getting into the swing of things. It's
good.
Getting pretty good.
Good.
I'm very pleased with that. They're coming up with ideas that are... I'm really trying to get sort of hold on to everything very lightly in my ideas for the game, and so they're pulling it in weird directions and stuff, and I'm really enjoying that. It's a whole new way of gaming for me. I'm really liking that. I created the ultimate Bachelor Chow.
Ultimate.
Hmm. Saturday night, I took a pound of ground beef, raw, and I put it in a pan. And I took a pound of raw bacon, really thick, good bacon, and I chopped it up into bits, raw, and threw it in the pan. And then I took a pound of chicken livers that I had bought, raw, chopped them up, threw them in the pan, and then I cooked the crap out of it. And I was left with what I would sort of call a meat slurry of sorts. That was absolutely delicious and proved to be a really good base for other things. Like, I took it and I added in some cream cheese and some sour cream and some spices and stuff and put it in a casserole dish and put some frozen hash browns over the top and baked it, and it may have been the most delicious thing I ever ate. And I took some of it later and I put it in some loose meat sandwiches. It was really good too. And no carbs in that part. No carbs in the meat slurry.
Meat slurry.
Was really, really tasty.
Okay.
So, I enjoyed that.
Sounds terrible to me, but...
I recently believe I have decided there is a particular porn star of which I am a fan.
Oh, well.
Which is unusual for me. No, I think you might find this interesting, though, because it's not...
Okay.
It's not for the reasons you would normally expect. It's not any physical quality of said individual.
Oh.
And it's not any particular act. It's not like because they do such and such.
Okay.
No, it is an interesting trait that I haven't really pondered too much, but I think it's important. verisimilitude, believability. I realize that this particular adult actor is convincing, and apparently that's kind of a big deal to me.
You don't suppose it's a big deal to other people?
I don't know. I don't think it's something that in general the industry, you know, selects for. I don't think the most successful porn stars tend to be the convincing ones. I think it frequently tends to be based much more on how they look and the particular things they do, be it particularly crazy things or particularly fetishy things or something.
I see.
But it hadn't really occurred to me before, but the believability that whatever premise is going on is really a thing. I mean, insofar as it's like watching any other movie. If you believe that you're in that moment, and, you know, since it's porn, there's also the needing to believe that they might be enjoying themselves. Which, I'll be honest, a lot of pornography does not have that feature.
Okay. Let's speak to that for just a second.
All right.
Because does that element, the element of whether or not it appears that the actors are enjoying themselves, truly not matter?
I think for some people it does not. I think for some people there is enough of a disconnect, enough of a lack of consideration for that they don't really care. Well, I mean, I think it is true that in the world there are individuals that when engaged in sexual activities, whether or not their partner enjoys them is of little to no concern of them.
I have a theory.
All right. Could be bunnies?
No.
All right.
My theory is this. That a lot of people who object to pornography's very existence, what they really more specifically object to is exploitation, you know?
Well, yeah.
And whatever. But my theory is that if you were to make, given two pornographic scenes and they're identical in just about every way, except in one it is very obvious, or it seems obvious anyway, that both of the people involved are willing and participants who like what they're doing.
Eager, even, you might say, yes.
And the other ones are either, you can tell they're not enjoying what they're doing, or it's just obvious they're not even...
At best, they're detached and bored.
Yeah, yeah.
Phoning it in, as it
were. That the people who enjoy pornography because it's exploitive won't even like the one where they're enjoying themselves
really?
Yeah.
Really?
So what this theory is saying is that if you want to take something away from the people who buy pornography because they're exploiters and this is part of their whatever, if the pornography is actually better made in terms of its erotic value, that they actually won't like it and they won't get anything out of it.
I could see that. I think I would narrow that. To me, that is a perhaps unarticulated for most people, particular kink, almost, I would say, that some people who get aroused by the exploitative nature of it. But I think you're right. And I think this whole idea is hitting at that sort of elusive thing that has been out there forever of attempting to make pornography for women kind of thing. And again, I think too many people tie it up into story or, you know, implicit rather than explicit and all sorts of, you know, things that certain women aren't into versus what they are. And I think a lot of it may honestly be this concept, this believability. Because I mean, it makes a huge difference for me, because I find something attractive about individuals that are genuinely aroused and excited to be doing what they're doing. And I find it much less attractive, even if the individual I'm talking about, the porn star I'm talking about, not an unattractive person at all, but there is nothing about them physically that is a particular thing for me. You know, they aren't my type in any particular physical feature that, like, you know, would be something I tend to be into. But the fact that they appear to really like what they're doing and really be attracted to the individual with whom they're with, regardless. I've now seen a few different ones. That's how I've sort of come to this opinion. Is huge for me. And sort of maybe one of the biggest things for me now. The same way, like, when I always talk about movies and my need for character sympathy. I think it may be a similar kind of thing.
Well, you know, I'm no expert in this area, as I'm sure you probably can imagine.
You do yourself a disservice. Don't be modest. You're like the porn king of Coralville. We know.
But it seems to me, as I study these things from a sort of a human behavioral perspective, it seems to me fairly obvious that, you know, there is such a thing as erotica, art, that has a sexual aspect to it, and that when it's done well, is not exploitive. You know, when it becomes exploitive, it loses a lot of its artistic value. It just becomes a record of someone being abused or of someone abusing themselves. And I think there are some people who like that record because of that aspect of it. And it makes sense to me that they wouldn't like something that's erotica or something that's artistic and expresses actual sexual desire and enjoyment, because that's not what they watch pornography for.
I can see that as a particular subset. To me, there's some overlapping in a Venn diagram. I think there's probably quite a few people who could enjoy both scene A and scene B in your hypothetical situation.
So I suppose, although I would wonder if the, you know, some of those people might just be able to impose their more exploitive worldview onto both
or
scenes.
Or vice versa.
I think a lot of people
have had to do that, where you're watching really poor acting in a porn, but your mind can sort of fantasize about what would this be like if it didn't suck, but the same things were happening.
Because, after all, if you can't do that, then your other option is to stop watching porn.
Yeah.
And who wants to do that?
No, children... Don't do that.
Well, ever. But a lot of people, that's exactly what they do. And probably in our culture, mostly women. They'll watch pornography and they'll realize that, okay, for me to see this as erotic, I'm going to have to bring a lot more to this than I intended to.
Need some relatability, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why don't I just go read an erotic story where I also have to bring a lot to it?
Yeah.
The whole point of watching it was so that I wouldn't have to work so hard to interpret it.
Did I bring up the thing on here before about the guy who will only look at animated pornography?
No.
There's a different podcast I've been listening to recently called The Indoor Kids. I would highly recommend it. It's about video games, actually. And it's a very cool podcast. It's under the Nerdist umbrella of podcasts. And it's hosted by Kumail Nanjiani, who's a comedian who actually I went to college with.
Yeah, right. So you talked about him.
Yeah, if anybody's listening that went to college with me, I'm not sure there is. But Kumail is big and famous now, and he's got a podcast about video games that's pretty awesome called The Indoor Kids. You should check it out. But there was one where I believe the topic of the show involved sexism and misogyny in games. And at some point, I don't remember how they got around this, but his co-host, who's his wife, Emily Gordon, mentioned that they have a friend who will only watch animated pornography because he gets sad watching, like, if he watches real life pornography, he just thinks, oh, you should call your mother. Like, it just makes him sad. But since there aren't actual people doing anything in the animated one, then he can get aroused by that. And I was like, I've never thought of that that way. Hmm. That's interesting.
That is interesting. Well, Yeah, I don't know. I just think that there's just from a human behavioral standpoint, it makes sense that there would be sexually themed art that would that people would respond to, not just on a physical level, but on many levels. And those other levels would enhance the physical response, I would think. Where if the artistic value is low, that there might not be enough in it to affect the physical, maybe even at all. You know, a person would be watching it, and just because there's nudity and sexual acts happening, nothing's going on in terms of a physical response, because that's not what they see. That's not what sexuality means to them. It doesn't just mean nudity and sex acts. It means, and it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, love or tenderness either, but it means passion at the very least. It means that there's something about the way the two people look at each other or respond to each other that tells a story, even if you're starting the scene right at the sex. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm trying to say? So, and I guess, you know, from my sort of layman's perspective, I to me the simplest way to explain that would be in terms of, and oversimplifying it, I'm sure, is in terms of somewhat of an artistic merit type of argument. And I think the reason that my understanding is that women often prefer written erotica over things that are visual, and I think the reason is because a lot of what they go to that's visual is not technically speaking very good erotica. I mean, it might be good pornography, whatever that means, but it's not very good erotica. And what makes it good or bad, like you said, if people are trying to figure that out and they think it's about story or acting or whatever, no, it's really mostly, I think, about what you're saying. The people involved, do they look like they're enjoying themselves? They look like they want to be involved? They look like they're actually sexually attracted to the people they're with? And if you have a scene where that's going on, I think then it becomes... You know, the artistic merit of it rises. It becomes more like what most people would consider erotica, and probably less like pornography. And I think more people, perhaps more women, would enjoy it. And it's really that simple, I think. But I don't know.
It is worth noting that I, at least personally, know a lot of men who don't particularly like pornography but enjoy erotica. And I know a lot of women who aren't necessarily that into erotica and really like pornography. Okay, so well, we should, you know, specify.
That's right, and I'm just speaking of...
And some people like me like both.
I'm just talking about the statistics I've seen that seem to make a big deal out of how, you know, men mostly consume pornography. But that's not to say that women wouldn't consume it if it somehow wasn't... If there was something different about it, because a lot of women enjoy written erotica. So...
I'm just saying a lot of women enjoy pornography.
No, I know. I'm just saying that these statistics are what make people wonder, how can we market pornography to more women, for example?
Ezzy, what do you think?
I think it's...
Ezzy's a female.
It's probably a more straightforward thing than most people want to make it. But that's usually true. I mean, like making video games for women and stuff like that. I mean, they're overthinking it. It's probably less about you doing something in your video games that you don't usually do, and it's more don't do something that you often do, which is alienate women through all kinds of, things that most people have talked about ad nauseum, so I won't get into it.
But. As he says, she gets alienated in video games because they generally require thumbs.
Well, you know how women are portrayed in video games.
I do, in fact.
And I can imagine how that would be. I find it alienating just to me. It's offensive to me. So, if I were a woman, I think I'd be offended, too.
Okay, we're at 33 and a half minutes.
Sorry.
William just loves talking about porn is our problem. All right, hat. Hat.
Azure Talon?
Fuck that guy.
Yo Hattie. Wow.
Wow. That's
pretty intimate there. Make him talk about copy machines. Well, I guess we're going to have to talk about copy machines.
I can talk about copy machines. Oh, my goodness. I was just complaining about this at work today. I had my annual review.
You did?
Yes. Went pretty well.
Hmm.
I was told by my boss it would pretty much look like my mid-year review would look, and my mid-year review was pretty good, so I was not worried. But actually, this review is slightly better even, so I am pretty well-liked by my boss. But there were a couple places in there under the different... It's similar to what you used to do. William used to be my boss, for those who don't realize. And it's a similar review to what you have. You know, there's different categories, and you give them like a 1 to 5 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually you put in some comments about, like, specifically why they got that figure.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple different places where it talked about various things I do and work with, and came up like 3 different times in my review how I, you know, work with the printers and do a lot of photocopying and things like that. And I do. I'm the go-to person when they break and all that. And not just like because I'm the guy in the office who's good. That's part of my job, is to actually maintain them and so forth. But I was like, really? My life has come to this point where, like, my big thing in my career is I'm the printer guy. I was like, what happened? But I'm pretty good about it. I do find this interesting. Somebody the other day mentioned this. And I don't think it's entirely true. It's sort of just a funny thing, but I think there's some truth to it. The idea that copiers have largely not advanced in the last 30 or 40 years.
Well, is there much reason for them to? I mean...
Well, and that's why I say it's not true, because there's lots of stuff with networking involved and being able to have a copier and a scanner and a printer in one device and stuff, but they still break down a lot. It's still such a sensitive thing.
So they haven't really been replaced by, you know, scanners and...
No, because there's still old people alive. It's like, we're working on it, but a lot of people have to die before we can start going paperless.
We're waiting for those people to pass on.
Yes, at least retire.
And take their copy machines with them.
Yeah.
I thought when you brought up your review, you were going to say that your boss told you that your review was slightly better than the one he wrote for the copy machine.
Well, no, I accused my boss of giving me somebody else's review and putting my name on it, because on the bottom of it said, on all the pages, it said December 2010. Oh. And I wasn't working there then, and I'm like, whose review was this? But that's the last time that the review form was updated.
Oh, okay.
But, and I knew that, I just like to give her crap. I love my boss, but
copy machines.
Yeah,
I don't really
the copy machine scored pretty well.
I don't really have anything to say about copy machines.
So whenever they break down and like grown-ups have to come and fix them, I have to send an email. Well, first of all, I fill out a form online, like a Word doc, basically, with what's going on. And then I send an email to our help desk and attach the form, and they send the form on to the actual printer techs, who then come and fix it.
Mm.
Now, going back a ways, when I send the email to the help desk, I usually make up some really crazy story. Like the printer's possessed and somebody has to, you know, you got to send in an old priest and a young priest and stuff like that. And by and large, help desk really likes these service requests because it's boring otherwise.
Yeah, right.
And so I've done these a lot, but every once in a while they're understaffed or it's too busy or something, and they get somebody monitoring the email who doesn't normally do it. And so one day I write a thing, and keep in mind, the attachment is still, like, that all has all the real stuff in it. So when the printer techs get it, it has the real description. But so I make up to say, I said, the printer in such and such room has gone rogue, and it has taken hostages, and it's threatening to kill them unless it gets 2 new containers of toner and 4 pieces of paper, so you gotta send somebody up to talk them down. And so they open a ticket in the system, and I get an email saying they've opened a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And the subject to this one says, the printer has gone rogue and is taking hostages, dot, dot, dot. And I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, man. I'm like, what is this going to turn into? Like, is this like a bomb threat now that I've done on my own company? I'm going to get in so much trouble. But nothing happened. But then I ask them later, and they're like, oh, no, that was so-and-so. Who's not? So now I have changed. And I make sure that the subject line of the email is very straightforward also. It's just the body of the man. And I said, like, should I stop? And the help desk guy who I knew in person was like, no, seriously, we love those. Don't mess with it. But every once in a while, I can tell that that other person is taking over, because I had one the 3rd of July, I think, and I just wrote in it. I said, the printer has been spouting some non-patriotic garbage and it needs to be re-educated. And the ticket opened and it said, the printer has been spouting some non-patriotic dot, dot, dot. And I'm like, oh my God. But so, a few days ago, I send out one. It's just a supply thing. I need more toner. But so what I put in the body of the email, as I said, the printer has started doing that little Shop of Horrors thing where it says, feed me, and I'm tired of coming up with human blood to put in it, so could we try some toner?
Let's try some toner.
Exactly. I get an email back from the help desk. It says, we are normally disinclined to fulfill this request. I'm like, oh shit, what did I do? Because that particular model of printer is meant to run on human blood, and toner could disrupt the system. However, we have recently been getting some complaints about the particularly eerie color of red printed out from that printer, so we will, in this situation, and this whole long thing, and I'm just like, oh God, this is the most awesome thing ever. I was like, you guys just made my day.
Yep.
So how's that for talking about copiers?
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good stuff. I had nothing, and you just went like crazy.
Let's totally move on. But as he's laying on the hat,
oh man,
so much not good about this. You need to move. I need to get into the hat.
Ugh. She just acts like she doesn't even understand what's going on here.
Here we go. Damn it. Wow, this is actually weird.
Why?
First of all, it's from Azure Talon.
Right.
Second of all, it says, Dear Ezzy.
Oh.
Meow? Ezzy. Azure Talon wrote you a message. Meow. Come here. Come here. Come here a little bit. Do you want to say anything to Azure Talon?
Go ahead. Don't be shy.
Ah.
What? Some bad things are going to happen.
No, I'm going to break the computer. You hold the computer for a minute. Okay. Ezzy, come here.
Well, there she
is. Come here. Say something to the folks at home.
Go ahead. You can do it. Yeah.
Say right. Again. No, at the mic.
Has she met Azure Talon? Because that wasn't very polite.
No.
Why would she say that? Just because you say it?
I don't know.
Azure Talon, I don't know if you speak cat, but maybe it's best that you don't.
Come on, Ezzy, say something.
I think she's done. I think she's disgusted.
She is unhappy, but she's purring.
She is disgusted. You can tell. Look at her face.
I can't see her face.
I can see it.
Well, hope you got that, people.
Well, I'm sure that it sounded like something.
So that's what she has to say about that, Azure Darling.
She puts you in your place.
Yeah.
How rude.
All right, next. Don't draw it, Azure Darling.
And on.
Oh. Anonymous, which means either somebody wished to remain anonymous or somebody forgot to sign their email. Because, you know, for the sake of anonymity, the hat presumes anonymity unless you actually sign the body of your email. Just so you know.
Just a little rule that the hat follows.
The hat respects others' personal space. I don't know.
Cosplay. Middle of the day on a summer afternoon, not Halloween, which, of course, it wouldn't be in the middle of the day in a summer afternoon.
That's true.
What would you dress up as and why? So I suppose this could have been simplified just to, you know, if you were going to do some cosplay, what?
No, but it's the middle of the day in a summer afternoon. So it's very hot. I think that's meant to be a factor here.
Why did the person specify not Halloween?
Because that's because the person's not that bright.
Oh.
I can say that because they're anonymous. So.
So,
but well, so then, the very hot daylight hours, we've had this terrible weather. Imagine this terrible weather, and you got to do cosplay. What the hell are you going to dress as outside?
I see. I don't do that. So, and I can't.
You have to. The gun to your head.
Someone's gun to my head. Someone's saying you have to do. You have to do
outside, in the heat.
So,
they say it like that too.
I don't even know. I mean,
once again, William takes a bullet to the head. Why? Because he is unable to deal with hypothetical situations that conflict with his worldview.
Well, it's not so much a worldview. It's just, I can't, I don't, I mean, okay, you dress up as a character, right?
Yes.
And I presume it's a character that you like to pretend that you are, or no, something. And I don't, I've never
cosplay can
felt
be done
that way about a character.
For a desire to express your appreciation for a character, or because you particularly think you could pull off looking like said character, or just because you think it's fun to pretend you're somebody else, and this is a particularly cool somebody else that's fun to pretend you are. For a change of pace.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay.
I mean even on, I love Halloween, it's my favorite holiday. I like wearing costumes on Halloween, but I can't think of a single time I've ever dressed as any, not even like a monster that people are familiar with. Have I gone out of my way to dress, you know what I'm saying? I come up with my own stuff. I don't.
So William would play an original character called a guy with a bullet wound in his head. you can cosplay as original characters.
What?
You can cosplay as original characters.
Like that you make up.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, really? Oh, well.
Some purists might get mad at you for it.
Why wouldn't I just make up a character that fits what I happen to be wearing at the time?
Because that's boring.
Well,
and no one would like you.
Well, I'm not concerned about that, so that's what I would do. let's say I was wearing this. I would cosplay a hobo. I guess. I'm a hobo. Everybody would believe that.
I believe it right now.
Yeah, look at me.
Also, you're a killjoy. No fun.
No. What does that mean? Why is it no fun?
Because we're all dressing up in costumes for fun on the hot summer day that's not Halloween. And you are just the asshole who's like, oh no, this is my costume. I'm just playing a normal guy.
I'm not trying to be difficult. I just can't think of anything.
Come up with something. It can be an original idea. It's like your Halloween costume. You come up with those. This is just summer daytime Halloween.
Yeah, but all of my Halloween, so then maybe I would just pick one of my Halloween costumes, but almost all of them are designed to be comfortable in the cold because
that's
it's always
what
cold.
Makes it a challenge. That's why they picked this.
Oh.
Maybe the challenge is coming up with a costume
maybe I need
that
to
you could stand to be in the heat.
Maybe I should think that Halloween comes and I've already got my costume picked out, but it turns out to be really hot that day.
There we go.
So what would
that'll
I,
work.
What
yes,
would I do?
Whatever helps you get through this.
Okay.
Well,
you answer while I think about it.
I am not.
Oh, sure. You don't have an answer either, but
I'm not
I'm
sure.
The freak.
I'm thinking about it. I know my answer's not, oh, I don't do that, or oh, this is what I'm wearing. No, I know there'd be a real one. I have difficulty with narrowing it down. The heat is tricky. I don't like being out in the heat at all. So even if, I was naked, I'm like, it's too hot. I don't want to be here.
Hmm.
But admittedly, nothing that's too heavy at that point. I probably would do, and I've actually sort of done this before. I don't know that I still own it, but I used to own a yukata, which is a bathrobe. It's a Japanese garment that's more of like a house coat as opposed to a kimono.
Okay.
And it tends to be much lighter. And what it actually ends up being is a very light cotton bathrobe, basically.
Okay.
With cool, like mine had dragon print on it or whatever.
All right.
And I took that and then would take like a boken, and I was just like samurai dude, you know. And I had my hair like slicked back. And I frequently claimed I was an imperialist 19th century plantation owner somewhere in the Pacific. Because I was just an angry, long-haired, bearded white guy dressed like an Asian, looking imperious over everyone. So I probably would go with that, because that would be a lot very nice and comfortable. I cosplayed that once at a convention, actually. I just wanted to wear a costume, so it was all, you know, super Asian samurai man. And that would work very well in the heat, so that would... And I'd have a pair of shorts on underneath, because as I learned at that convention, people want to know what you're wearing under your yukata.
They do.
And they want to check out. Even if you tell them that you're not going to tell them, they want to know. And they will stop at very little. Luckily, I was wearing shorts at the time as well. So some part of my brain anticipated that this could be an issue. I was prepared. Okay, I have answered the question to the satisfaction of all present. Which is lucky, because that's just you, me, and Ezzy. And... two of you don't give a damn.
I think I would cosplay a Miami retiree.
Miami retiree. Okay, describe this to me.
Well, I'd have a straw wide brim hat. I'd probably do something to my hair to make it look grayer. A light, loose-fitting, maybe floral-printed shirt. Some Bermuda shorts. Loafers with dark socks that are pulled up to the middle of my calf. And that's probably it.
You're missing two elements.
Well, really, sunglasses.
Really one and a half. Yeah, well, but the big wraparound ones.
Yes. Right.
But no, you're missing one and a half elements here.
Oh.
First of all, what color are the loafers?
Oh, they're... that's a good one. I don't know. Brown, black?
No, they are white.
Oh, they're white. White?
Because they match your white belt.
Oh, white belt,
that
yes.
That is worn very, very
yes,
high
yes,
on your
yes,
stomach.
Right.
Yes.
See, I need help with this stuff.
No. I think that was a good effort. You just were missing a couple of details. I think that's quite a good cosplay costume. And I think we could probably even turn that into an actual character that is already out there. That was probably on Seinfeld or something.
Well, that's the great thing about cosplay, isn't it? You think you're being original, but oops, there's an anime with that.
It's been done. Exactly. Yeah. So there, Anon... I know you were hoping for something kinky of us in Speedos and loincloths and things because of the heat.
I did also think...
But that is not how Tony and William roll.
No. I did also think of something that would allow me to wear a kilt.
That's a good one.
That would be all right, I guess.
You could do the Braveheart deal and whatever.
I guess, sure.
Blue face paint. I love an excuse for blue face paint.
Yeah, that would... probably be
that'd
nice.
Be good news too. Cool. I've never owned or worn a kilt.
No, nor have I.
I have owned and worn a skirt. Never owned or worn a kilt.
Nope, I haven't either.
I'm also not entirely sure what a utila kilt is.
What?
A utila kilt.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Huh. I have. And I think it's supposed to be like utilitarian kilt.
Okay.
But I don't know what that really means. Speaking of which, my boss asked me this a while ago, and I didn't have a real good answer, and I meant to look into it, but I'm lazy. Have you heard the slang term props before? Give me my props.
Yes.
I know what that means conceptually. I know what someone is talking about. What does that stand for?
Proper.
Proper what?
Respect. Proper respect. Props.
I knew you with your street lore would really
Unless I'm wrong.
Your savvy street dog.
That's my understanding what it means. Maybe I'm wrong.
People tell William he's wrong, even if he's right, because it amuses me. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and comment on anything you've heard, especially if you want to tell William he's wrong, because I always love when that happens, and it happens so damn seldom. Also, write the hat. Please write the hat. We could always use more things. And at this point, it's down to like 3 or 4 people who just write the hat consistently. So if you haven't written the hat in a while or haven't written the hat at all, write the hat. We would love to hear from you. You don't even have to sign your name, so no one will know it was you. Just write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. It's a couple minutes early, but I want to stop now because we have another one to do. Do you want to put your evil plan into motion?
We could try it, see what happens.
All right.
What's it going to hurt? We've never done it before.
We have not. We'll see what happens.
But first, I want to thank Azure Talon and Anon, and whoever comes out of the hat next. But I'll have a chance to thank you in a week. How evil we are.
Well, it's also Anon.
Oh, okay, well.
The question is, this somehow seems very appropriate here. Where do you see yourself in 1, 5, and 10 years from now?
Whoa.
So really, 1 year and a week, 5 years and a week, and 10 years and a week from now.
Who knows?
All right, people, we will answer that question and many more, probably like one more, in a week's time, which for us will just be like a couple minutes, so... We'll see you then. Why am I talking like a ghost
now? I don't know.
Dress up as a hobo.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.